Huddle up. It's time for Talkin' Football.
Let's go, go, go.
Stay with us as Scott Hunter and Tracy Turner discuss Alabama, Auburn, South Alabama, the SEC, and college football around the country. Brought to you by Bayou Fasteners, Dr. Chris Walton of Premier Medical Eye Group, Clutch and Powertrain, and Jordan Automotive. Call now at 694-1055 or join the discussion on the WNSP app.
I'll let you ask that question.
All right, we're talking football. Scott, Tracy, Dave Schultz, Michael Brauner. We got Scott Hunter, Tracy Turner. Happy New Year's, guys.
Happy New Year.
Is that playoff football or what?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Michigan still can't stop the run.
Well, they say that, but look, I can go back with all my Alabama friends and everything. Do you remember, like, the Holy Roller number two, where the Auburn guy chases Mark Ingram down, hits him about a yard from the sideline on the 20, and the ball rolls end over end over end over end and never goes out of bounds till it gets to the end zone? You can go look it up, and went out of the end zone for a touchback. I mean, just think of what had to happen. TCU had two pick sixes, right?
Right.
A blown call, should have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
Don't know how really they didn't get it right, because they did get Tulane's call right.
They did get Tulane's call right, correct. Yeah. Outside, they didn't get the targeting call right, but okay.
Well, hey, maybe with some of the calls we saw, they finally come to their senses a little bit and going to let them play football.
Right.
All right. I don't know if somebody's at the two with his head down fixing to go in for the touchdown, how do you tackle him without hitting him in the head? And he's not defenseless. He's trying to score.
Right.
You distracted me there. Two pick sixes, a blown call, a fourth down stop, and a fumble into the end zone that was recovered. Absent any of those, Michigan wins the game. But they play the football game because those things can happen. They did happen in TCU.
And I'm told the crew that was on the field during that, when that tight end either caught it and didn't catch it and then caught it in the end zone, it was either a touchdown or he was down at the one. The crew that was on the field was the same SEC crew that was officiating the Tennessee-Alabama game.
That same crew you've mentioned before.
There you are. So,
yeah, but I mean,
but I'm told that the crew called it a touchdown.
Yeah, it's one thing to get it wrong when the play happens.
Well, let me finish. The crew, I thought they'd blown it out because I was at Manning's. Archie was talking, and a bunch of us were all blabbing it up, and I was kind of half watching, and I thought the crew had missed it. But I was corrected. Mike Tindall says the crew got it right. They called it a touchdown.
Yeah.
It was the replay crew, listen to this one now, in Pittsburgh. It was a neutral replay crew in Pittsburgh that said, no, he's down at the one-foot line.
And they fumble the next play.
And they fumble the next play. Now, how in the world can an experienced football viewer say that he was down on the one? Or half-yard line? Because he did not have control of the ball, that was quite obvious. Quite obvious. I mean, little Joe knows that. And I could ask Logan, my six-year-old. Logan, did he have, no, sir. And he didn't have that. He caught it in the end zone. So I don't know how in the world they deemed it complete on the half-yard line. I have no idea.
Well, let me go into that just a minute, though. As much as some of us, my wife's listening, she would say about the referees. Replay got so many things right over this holiday period. I frankly hope they're starting to turn a little corner on this targeting. I mean, we play football. As we saw last night, and we're going to have somebody talk to us here. Scott has us a guest. It is a vicious game. If you don't believe it, talk to some of us that have played it for a long time, okay? And there are hits going to occur. And if you take that out of the game, then we just as well to have 7-on-7 and flag and see how quarterbacks can throw. But the people getting the Tulane game right, the folks in the booth who got the Georgia tight end, if you're an NFL team and when he gets eligible in one more year and you want another Kelsey, or what's the guy with San Francisco, the tight end?
George Kittle.
That guy at Georgia, did you see him keep his feet off the ground, brace his body with his left arm.
Well, it was Bowers.
Bowers.
Yeah.
And get
yeah,
the
yeah.
first down.
Yeah. Right.
And that could have been the game.
Yeah.
Yes. They got a field goal. They were stopped. They were short.
They were short. And yep. he body control and his, you know, so it only takes me back. I told somebody, if they had only had instant replay back at the Auburn-Georgia game when William Andrews scores and the referee said he got stopped short, then – you know, Barfield may not have ever gotten fired at all. So anyway. Oh,
Let me make mention Dr. Gary Phillips, cardiologist with Cardiology Associates, will join us in the second segment. I asked Gary if he'd come on. He's my cardiologist and keeps mine ticking. Come on with us and just talk about last night and his observations and what, you know, what could have occurred and so forth and so on.
Right.
So Gary will come
and
on.
And anybody out there want to call and join us and
sure.
ask questions?
Yeah.
We'll be happy to have you.
Well, so. I did bring this up. I thought there was one something more recent. This is from 2004. A Cornell lacrosse player died Wednesday after he was struck in the chest by a ball during a game against Binghamton. George Biardi, a 22-year-old senior defenseman from Washington, collapsed on the field during the fourth quarter and never regained consciousness. Basically the same thing. The ball hit him in the chest.
Yes.
And the same reason that DeMar Hamlin went down.
And somebody told me at the Y this morning that is the reason they keep a defibrillator on the field during lacrosse right. games for that very reason. So I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah, I thought something was a little bit more recent, but that's almost 20 years ago. All right, Michael, you have a phone call.
Yeah, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Happy
okay,
to
I
here.
Had just one comment, a little bit off topic, but do you think the 12-game format would have given us any better games than we had on Saturday?
I don't know how you could have gotten better
good
games.
Good question.
I mean, maybe more of them.
Yeah, maybe more. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Tulane is now in the semifinals.
I was going to say.
Right?
Hey, justifiably.
Maybe in the 12 teams, we would have had Tulane and USC.
Right.
Well, yeah. See, that would be my next question, but that would have been a so much of a hypothetical. I didn't want to put you on the spot with saying would it have worked out the same way with the 12-game format.
Well, it goes from the four top teams will get a bye.
Correct.
And so 5 plays 12, and yeah. 6 plays 11, and so forth and so on. So then,
was that basically Tulane and USC? Was it USC basically 5, or was Alabama 5?
Alabama, I think, was 5.
Okay,
but you could argue.
Well, USC was 6 right there.
Okay, so
right.
that yeah. means Tulane now would be playing in the final 8.
Correct. They yeah. would get number 1 Georgia.
So was that a semifinal or quarterfinal?
That would be a quarterfinal.
Quarter. Yeah, they would be in the quarterfinal, being
right.
Tulane.
Right.
So.
Four games, right?
So four games. So now they would be in the quarterfinals. Yeah, you'd have the first round, quarterfinal, semis. Yes. So they would be in the quarterfinals. Yeah.
So are we still going to have conference championship games when we have this?
Oh, yeah.
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 So we're talking about
that's just a money grab.
17 games
oh,
for
yeah.
the champion?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. That's well, Division 1 AA plays 16 games. And they have for many years. Something like that. Division 3, too.
Come back in, Jerry. We're
okay, I'm right here. I got one more question. How does TCU beat Georgia aside from maybe bringing Scott out of retirement?
All right, here's what's happened announced today. Georgia apparently has got 4 key players that are maybe out for the game, or if not
uh-oh.
Out, are really in trouble. Tight end Darnell Washington left the Ohio State game after suffering an apparent ankle injury. They've got a linebacker that's out, apparently, and he was backing up another linebacker who was out
yeah,
earlier.
Number 32.
Nolan Smith, torn pectoral muscle, was replacing him. Chaz Chambliss, outside linebacker, sustained a hyperextended knee, so he might not be playing. And there's 2 others on here. Receiver Ladd McConkey, who also battling injuries, da-da-da-da. Is in trouble, and it, along with edge rushers Michael Williams and Robert Beal are also nursing some injuries. So, as we talked about, Jerry, you and I have talked about it. The why, what Ray Nitschke told me was in December, now January,
yep.
is sometimes it's not the best team, but the healthiest team that's the best team.
Well, yes, I'm a big believer in that. Yeah, yeah. And TCU, if they throw the ball, they may be able to, pick apart Georgia,
yeah.
just like.
With these guys out,
C.J. Stroud did.
And you know that there's a possibility going. You can see the TCU coaching staff now. They're making plans to attack these areas,
right,
whether these players are in or not, because even if they're in, you know they're injured and they maybe not 100%.
Right.
And it's not just Ohio State. How many yards did Nussmeier and in tandem with the starter at LSU throw for? Didn't they throw for like an LSU record, 600 yards or something?
63 points.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, but it's 2 weeks away, right?
No, it's Monday.
It's Monday.
The ninth.
Really? Oh, I'm sorry. I got the dates wrong. Well, I was going to say maybe there's a little recovery time there, but that's too quick.
Yeah,
I don't,
about 10 days. It's a 10-day thing. Yeah. 10 days. Jerry, Happy New Year. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, and
Jerry, Happy New Year. Nice talking to you guys.
Thanks.
And both teams have to make the trip to the West Coast, so it's not like they're playing in Dallas or New Orleans or somewhere where, you know, it's kind of a close-by situation. So that puts the trainers and the treatment staff under a lot of pressure. They got to get a lot done Monday and today with treating the players I just spoke about before they probably leave for, I'm guessing, Los Angeles Friday.
Short. They had their bowl game experience.
Yeah, so they go out there Friday and practice a little Saturday, and then Sunday's a walk around and game on Monday. So not much time to get well.
All right, so Dr.
Gary Phillips coming
Gary
up with
Phillips
next.
Coming on next.
Cardiologist.
All right. We'll talk about DeMar Hamlin. After this, we're talking football, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Welcome back to Talkin' Football on 105.5 FM and live at WNSP.com and on the WNSP app. Once again, Scott Hunter and Tracy Turner.
All right, Dave Schultz, Michael Bronner. We're talking football with Scott and Tracy. Honored to have, Scott's cardiologist on the air with us, Dr. Gary Phillips, Cardiology Associates. Dr. Phillips, how are you? Thanks for hopping on Talking Football.
Doing well. Thank you, guys. Look forward to getting caught up with you.
Yeah, can you explain from afar on what technically happened to DeMar Hamlin yesterday?
Well, basically, we've seen it in the past, but it's an Italian term called commotio cordis, where just any kind of blow to the chest. It can be a child falling off a bicycle to a football player hit like DeMar was, where the blow actually occurs during a critical part of the cardiac cycle. And it just happens randomly. It can happen from anything, but it's so important, to get the patient back in the rhythm. And usually the thing that does it best is just aggressive CPR and usually cardioversion, which is an electrical shock to the heart.
Reportedly, that's exactly what they did. They did CPR, and they used a defibrillator in there as well.
Yes, and it's critical. Hopefully, him being young and probably in excellent condition overall, that he'll wake up, but it really is important the next 24 hours. Hopefully, he won't have any neurological sequelae from it.
Gary, what is the situation after he recovers? Since it's not apparently he didn't have any kind of heart defect. Well, we wouldn't know if he didn't have a heart defect, but if there's no heart defect or anything. And he's your patient, and the Buffalo Bills say go see Dr. Phillips and he'll clear you to play maybe next year or more games this year or not. How would that go?
Well, I'm sure while he's in the hospital there, before they even let him get out of the hospital, they'll run him through the mill and make sure there's no underlying, congenital heart thing. But, Scott, you know how it is in the NFL. Even my son, we played at Alabama. They put these players through preseason exams that usually exclude any significant underlying cardiac problems. But before he leaves the hospital in Cincinnati, they'll run him through the mill. And what we do with something like that, there's no underlying heart problem, and he's never had any issues before, he will probably not have any restrictions whatsoever. Sometimes we will place internal type of cardio defibrillator in their chest. It's about the size of a half dollar and has a little electrode that will protect him down the road. But if he has normal heart function and normal valves and no congenital thing, there's a good chance he won't have anything done. They'll tell him to play football in a year. Because, again, that can happen to anybody on that team. You can't really say that he's going to be at a little bit higher risk. You know, and it's a rare thing. We've seen, I think, three here in our practice in Mobile in the last 35 years. But, again, it can happen to anybody. And, of course, I'm sure him and his family, you're not going to want him to play football. But any contact sport, soccer, or again, a kid can fall off his bike. It can happen to anybody.
Well, I know that Dave and I were talking before the show, and what's the sport where they?
Lacrosse.
Lacrosse. Apparently, they keep a fibrillator on the sideline, if I heard that right, because, oh gosh, back in the early 2000s, one of the players' kids got hit by a lacrosse ball and died. It hit him right in that, I guess, what, lower solar plexus, right into the heart area. Ooh. And so, but what you're saying, if, you know, if you recover from it, you're ready to go in some time.
Well, and remember, it happened here a few years ago where a young person, 9 or 10 years old, was hit in the chest with a baseball that was just thrown at him. And, you know, it's just going to depend on the next 24 hours. It's going to be real important. And you would, I'm not really sure how shortly after he collapsed that they actually shocked him, but I can't stress enough how important it is when bystanders are doing CPR to do not worry about breaking their chest bone. They need to compress as hard as they can, and hopefully they got oxygen and blood flow restored to his brain ASAP. I know he's on life support now, and, you know, hopefully there wasn't any long-term damage from the time that he was unconscious.
What did, and we're talking with Dr. Jerry Phillips from Cardiology Associates, what does it mean when you incubate them?
What that means is you put a tube in their throat, you know, in down through their mouth into their trachea, and you're breathing for them.
Right.
And a lot of times, I mean, these people are all put on the ventilator, and they hyperventilate them because there's a lot of cerebral edema or swelling in the brain. And so they'll put them on the ventilator and keep them on the ventilator for a couple of days and let the swelling go down, and then they'll try to wean him off the ventilator. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's on life support for a while, and by a while, I mean a few days.
Dr. Phillips, this is Tracy Turner. Approximately how many minutes before you start getting some damage to the brain from lack of oxygen? 30 seconds, a minute? I mean, we know these divers that go down without diving equipment and hold their breath, they can hold their breath for some people 3-4 minutes. But in a routine scenario, how long did he have before he would probably start suffering some type of brain injury from the loss of oxygen?
Well, and that's a good point, Tracy. Everybody's different. I'm sure he was just in spectacular condition. And it's usually we like to see people waking up or getting blood flow returned within 5 minutes. You hear of drowning victims and people like that. Everybody's different, but usually, you know, 4 to 5 minutes is a maximum amount. That some people will go as long as 8 or 9 minutes, but it's just going to be critical, you know, how quickly they got a restored pulse on the field. So there are certain things that they'll be testing. They've tested since he got in the hospital, looking at his pupils, how responsive they are, and all kind of other brainstem functions to assess whether he possibly had any significant long-term damage. But hopefully he'll wake up and this will all be a moot point.
So the fact they were able to, just within, 30 minutes, start CPR? Pretty aggressive.
It sounded like, yes, they had started CPR. We didn't find out about it until 10 minutes in, but they seem to have started CPR very early.
Is that beneficial to his prognosis?
Absolutely, and we've been encouraging people for a long time to teach CPR with kids in the 4th, 5th, 8th, 9th grade just as early as you can, because bystanders are the ones that save people's lives. And I'm sure the trainers in the NFL are so good, and the staff in general, that they started CPR as soon as they can. But you're talking about a guy that's in shoulder pads, and you got to rip those things off, and I'm just hoping they did start compressing on his chest just as soon as they could. And hopefully got blood flow within, or a pulse within a minute or two.
Well, it was pretty obvious from watching it. Any of us are old enough to remember the look on the first racer's face when he approached Dale Earnhardt's car, the way he was motioning. And it was the same motion from the players on the field. They realized that his condition was very serious. I mean, you could see the franticness and their motioning for trainers to get there to assist him. So, you know, these folks are trained at the highest level, NFL trainers. So I would assume they're doing exactly what you're talking about. The minute they get there, they're cutting stuff off and getting to his chest.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, watching the play itself, I mean, we see that play every day where somebody's hitting the chest and they bounce up and it's no big deal. But, you know, during the cardiac cycle, there's certain intervals where the heart is really prone when you get hit like that to go in an abnormal heart arrhythmia. Anyhow, I just want to encourage everybody to learn CPR at an early point in your life, and don't worry about breaking their sternum. Their sternum will heal. Just compress that heart as fast as you can, and you know, prayers are with DeMar and all of his family and friends.
All right, Gary, thanks for coming on with us.
Thank you so much, Doc.
Okay, guys, thank y'all for all you do.
All right,
talk to you later.
Thanks to Dr. Jerry Phillips, Gary Phillips, cardiology associates for helping us out with that. All right, let's take a time out.
Hey, one thing before you do that, let's just stress to everybody, one, he said learn CPR.
Yeah.
But two, this is not just a football injury. Learn CPR because your grandchild could be riding the bike they get for Christmas, fall off and hit the handlebar. As he said, you could have a soccer get kicked in the chest with a soccer ball. Yeah. This is nothing that's just a football kind of injury. This could, you know, you could be putting the light bulb in and slip off and hit your chest on the sofa. So, you know, the best thing is to have some skills about CPR, as he said, to immediately start compressing the chest.
Yeah, I can say I got hit by Buck this one time, and I thought my heart had stopped.
And Buck has probably wanted it too, knowing him.
Yeah, I was wearing green and gold. He's wearing that midnight blue. So.
Let's take a time out, Michael. We'll come back. We'll talk about Alabama in the bowl game. Pretty good after a little bit of a slow start. Bryce Young looked good. Apparently now Auburn can go back and recruit Thompson High. That's also good. Dave Schultz, Michael Brunner. We're talking football with Scott and Tracy. Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Hey, this is Slick Willie Shaw from the world-famous Harlem Globetrotters. You're listening to Sports Radio WNSP 105.5 FM.
Welcome back to Talkin' Football on 105.5 FM and live at WNSP.com and on the WNSP app. Once again, Scott Hunter and Tracy Turner.
All right, Dave Schultz, Michael Brunner. We're talking football with Scott and Tracy. What time is this basketball game, Michael?
8:00.
So we got, do we have the John Rochetti show coming up?
We do.
All right.
Who's playing at 8, is it?
Alabama? Ole Miss in Alabama.
Oh, yeah, tonight.
Yeah. So pregame show at 7.
All right. I know the cheerleader at home will have that tuned up.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about this bowl game, because obviously Alabama looked really good once they got going. They were down 10-0, one bad defensive play, and then that was all she wrote.
Where's that team been?
That's right.
All season.
Right.
Rush the passer. Played good defense against the run. Right. I don't think the receivers dropped a ball. I mean, they made that throw that Bryce made over in the far deep corner to
Brooks.
Brooks. Yeah. I mean, that was similar to the throw he made against Auburn 2 years ago to win the,
right.
you know, at least tie the game to go into overtime. I mean, when he threw that, I saw Brooks breaking by the defender, and I thought, I just wonder because he's moving to his left if he'll stop and see him and be able to lead him before he runs completely out of the back of the end zone. I mean, he put it right in that corner.
He couldn't have handed the ball any better to him.
Any better. Yeah. I mean, beautiful, right. perfect throw. And the rest of the day, he was on target. The receivers are catching the football.
So what do you think happened to begin the game? Because he was off. He didn't miss by a yard or two. Well, he was missing by like 5 yards. Like, remember, him and the wide receivers were not on the same page, exactly.
Give Kansas State some – one of the fans asked me, who was sitting beside me, what's going on? And I said, well, Kansas State is – they looked at Alabama a pretty long time, and they've got the first 20 or so plays, both offensively and defensively. They've got them rehearsed. They've got a script. They're going to run the script on offense, and on defense, they're going to look to take away certain things and try to get Bryce off balance early, and they did. And their offensive script worked real well. They were going to the weak side and picking on Alabama on the weak side very well. But then the script ran out. On offense and on defense, all the things they had seen that they prepared for, Alabama started doing some different things, and all of a sudden, talent and skill and speed and so forth came to the top.
Very much so. They did get some help a little bit from Kansas State. Interesting coaching decisions. Calling a timeout at the end of the first half,
yeah.
which wasn't really – right. If Alabama wants to let the time run out, I'm going to let Alabama let the time run.
Yeah, let them go.
If Alabama wants to call a timeout, I can't do anything about that. Yeah. But I'm not going to help out Alabama.
But, Dave, you could tell from after the first 20 plays, both offensively and defensively, and Alabama started really getting in sync, you could see that there was quite an imbalance in skill and talent out there. And eventually that was going to show
it did.
In a big it did. Way.
Right. Also, the onside kick probably wasn't very bright. After we called timeout in Alabama.
Well,
it was 14-10 game.
Yeah,
I did. 3 minutes and 1 second, it was 35-10.
But I'll take the other side of that. The guy over there in, what are they, purple and what are the
right, purple and white?
Yeah, he realizes to beat Alabama, they just can't play vanilla.
So
they've got to take some chances.
So I don't mind the going for it on 4th and 2.
Well, even the onside kick, though. You got to take some chances. But you just have to, Dave. You just can't line up and beat a team that's superior to you unless you get some breaks and put some points on the board and start
right.
putting some pressure on them and so forth. So I told the fan, that was stupid. And I said, well, in the context of the guy had to, he's got to take some risk.
So do you think if it was 14-10, he would have done it? Or do you think he did it because it was 21-10 and now he's really got to take a risk?
I think 21-10, you're right. Okay. I think you got a good point there.
Right. So,
you
know, 'cause
he knows if he doesn't get it, it's going to be 28-10, and it was.
Right. I mean, maybe he just figured out he couldn't stop him. That was it. We're talking football. Scott and Tracy, have to take your phone call, 694-1055, 694-1055. The guys announcing they're going pro.
Yeah.
Eli Ricks.
Yep.
And Brian Branch. The others were not a surprise.
No.
With Bryce Young, Will right. Anderson. We knew those guys were going. Jahmyr Gibbs. Maybe a little surprise, but not that much of a surprise.
Not really.
But Brian Branch having a great season.
Yeah.
Eli Ricks, always highly touted. You know, take what you will from the mock drafts. He's not even playing in September and October.
Yeah.
And he's top 10 pick.
Well, I think Eli Ricks came to Alabama because he knows that when people call Nick Saban and want to know about Eli Ricks, that if he plays well for Nick Saban, and he did after the first part of the season when I understand he had some problems learning a little bit about the defenses and some, you know, work problems, too, in practice that Nick wasn't happy with. But once he got on the beam, I mean, he really turned into a top-notch cover corner. And I would think that now any NFL scout or team that's calling Nick is going to get, this player can play for you.
Yeah, he can. All right. So, we got a couple phone calls. Michael?
Yeah, we'll go to Ben first.
Hey, Ben. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys.
Go ahead.
Listen, I would just like to ask y'all a quick question about this recruiting class that Alabama's got.
All right.
Do y'all know how many of them are going to be early enrollees?
Michael, I thought I saw half of them are early enrolled.
Yeah,
a couple of them were already practicing with the team. Yeah.
Some of them went to bowl practice in Tuscaloosa.
Eli Holstein.
In bowl practice. So
Eli Holstein went to New Orleans and was practicing,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, he was throwing against his – he was the scout team quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that it?
I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Ben. That was an easy question. I thought I heard half of the class, maybe even about 20 of them, were early enrollees. We'll find that out here.
Well, that's become what you've got to do now.
Well,
if you're an elite player, as you would be to sign with Alabama, you just got to give it up, not to have that old high school graduation and all
right.
the nice parties and all associated with it. You got to get your tail on to Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, wherever you're going, and get in the cube and start learning what's going on.
That's as much for that as it is to get out of the cube, I think. Like, Bryce has graduated, right? Will Anderson graduated.
Yeah,
they have their degrees,
yeah.
and that's because they were early enrollees. Also, right. it does give you a little bit – it does give you that first semester – without your head totally spinning.
Exactly.
And you're just doing practices every other day,
yeah.
whereas you're trying to get ready, to get ready for a season.
And it puts you in position to go through spring training.
Correct.
And that's very important. I think my last two spring trainings, I could have mailed it in. But the first two, as Tracy will attest to, the first two is really important. The first one, you don't really know what's going on. You're
right.
trying to find out where
right.
you're supposed to be. And the second spring training, you're trying to win a starting position or get in position to win a starting position. So that the first two spring trainings you can get under your belt
Correct.
Is a good thing.
Right. Yeah. And it gives the coaches an idea of what they got. And, all right, so you're not going to play this year, but this is what we want you to work on.
There
Most
go.
Of that is probably just getting bigger and or faster. Because you're going from 17, you're playing against teenagers to playing against men.
You're looking at me, and I'm not a supporter of early enrollee. So
you're not?
No. You're going to get old enough soon enough. Don't lose your last semester in school. I'm not going to say, but I know of many right now that misses what they let go. The basketball season, they'll never get back. Their high school baseball season, they'll never get back. It works out for those 1.5% that make it to the NFL.
Right.
For the other 98.5%, it doesn't work out.
Well, I guess in this respect, we're talking about just like me. I was only football. I didn't have baseball, basketball, golf, or anything else. You know, I went to Vigor out in Pritchard. So, consequently, I had football, and that was all. So, as fast as I could get into the queue at Alabama, if I would have gone to a spring training, my high school senior spring, I guess you'd say it, I would have done that if
you could back then.
Could.
Let's have another phone call, Michael.
Alabama Nature Boy.
Hey, Alabama Nature Boy. Happy New Year. Thanks for the call.
Hey, guys. Hey, one thing that I noticed in this game with Bama, they made some adjustments that actually worked, which I didn't see a lot of that this year. To start with, they were playing off of the receivers. They finally got up there, started challenging, and then they put a spy pretty much on that little running back. It made all the difference in the world whenever you make some in-game adjustments that actually work. Some of the season, I didn't see that, but they really played a good game.
Boy,
you
hit that right on the head. After the little guy's long run, they had somebody assigned to him, and not to knock him into next Tuesday, but just get over there and grab a hold of his jersey. And somebody's coming to help you, and that's what they started doing. They had a so-called spy or mirror guy, a linebacker there that could just mirror him and just reach out and grab his jersey, get a piece of him, but don't let him just blast up through there. But, man, 10 yards downfield, he was uncatchable.
He's quick as a hickory.
He is. Wow.
What do they say?
Really is.
What do they say about
him? And he's more powerful than you think he is because he's so short.
Well, his balance is incredible.
Yes.
So, as far as just hitting him and knocking him off his feet, he just bounces off you like a bowling ball and keeps going.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him.
Yeah,
his balance is incredible.
Because a lot of times he'd just go right in the middle of the line, and you'd think you'd only get 1 or 2 yards, and all of a sudden it was a 5-yard gain. He's pushing.
And he's also hard to see behind the line.
Right. Yeah.
So you don't, as a linebacker, really know what hole he's fixing to plant and go and he's a one plant cut go. He doesn't need a lot of time to turn that body and get it going.
What was he 5'6"?
5'5".
When I looked out there and saw him, I said, good gracious, he looks like my grandson.
Couldn't hem him up in a phone booth.
Kool-Aid almost caught him.
So, oh, that's right.
Kool-Aid from the other side of the field almost caught him. I mean, he give it up to Kool-Aid. You know, he didn't give up. He could have very easily said, thanks for coming, but he almost got him. All right, so a good job. I think Bryce, and we'll talk about this later, on other shows, because that'll be coming up later. But I think Bryce played himself into what might be Alabama's first number one pick ever.
I think you got a point there. Who's got well, we don't know yet who will have the top
Houston
pick. It is determined.
It'll be Houston.
That the Texans will have the Houston or
Houston,
Dallas, Dallas
Texas.
Or
Houston, Texas.
Will have the first pick. So, I would say I don't know where else I would look if I'm looking for a quarterback than to overlook Bryce Young.
Well, someone suggested they may not look at the quarterback, take Will Anderson or Jalen Carter and get the quarterback next year.
Well, they can do that, but they'll just basically blow away this year.
Right. Well,
you can't play in the NFL without a quarterback, be it a rookie.
That would be the point.
Be it a quality rookie or a veteran.
That would be the point is to be bad again. But now I got my defensive guy and I got my quarterback, which would either be Caleb Williams or Drake May or Bo Nix.
But if that's what you're going to do, then you trade down. Okay, you trade down to 3 or 4 and let somebody else that really wants the quarterback give you their one and their two and all this other just to go up to get the quarterback. If that's what you want to do, there's no difference in choosing 3 or 4 than choosing one.
And you make that deal with the Bears every day because they'll bite on anything you offer them.
I mean, think about it. If somebody wants a quarterback and you don't and you want Will Anderson, then at least swap to 2.
Well, Chicago's sitting at 2, so they're going to take a defensive player because they got their quarterback. Well, and then you
have
Seattle.
They have a quarterback.
What's that?
They have a quarterback.
They have their quarterback, yeah. Chicago's got Fields. Mm. Yeah, Justin. He's not going anywhere. And then Seattle's got, we don't know what they're going to do. Seattle could take a quarterback, keep Geno and take a quarterback. Arizona's not taking a quarterback. Indianapolis will take a quarterback. So unless Indianapolis wants to jump up to number 5.
You mean jump from 5 to 1?
5 to 1, yeah. Jump from 5 to 1.
Well, irregardless whether it's the first pick in the draft,
I think he should
or he's in the top 10 of the draft, he's going to be in the top 10 or the first one in the draft.
I think he'll be the first quarterback taken.
So
I agree.
He has the temperament and the disposition, and he doesn't get rattled. I mean, if I wanted a quarterback, I'd draft him. That's what I'd do.
I'm with you.
I'm somewhat objective since – you know, I don't have any, I don't drink Crimson Kool-Aid and all that. I can objectively look at it. And he just, to me, is the best quarterback out there.
Well, you poise and confidence, you're right, Tracy.
Well, he's got a good arm, too.
Got the arm, but, you know, the behind the scenes, the poise and confidence, you can just see it.
Yeah, and he played through an injury.
Yes, and you took the words out of my mouth. And what they like to see is you – yeah, they know everybody's going to get hurt, but how quick can you get yourself back on the field and be effective? You don't have to be 100%, but just get back out there and be effective.
I'm with you.
All right, let's take a timeout. We'll put a bow on it when we come back. I guess we got one more game to predict.
Oh, how about that? How about the Mississippi State Bullies sending Coach Leach's memory out with a win down at the Pirate? You know, was that not appropriate had the pirate ship in the background?
Good teams win, great teams cover. Back after this, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Welcome back to Talkin' Football on 105.5 FM and live at WNSP.com and on the WNSP app. Once again, Scott Hunter and Tracy Turner.
All right, Dave Schultz, Michael Bronner. We got the John Ruschetti Show coming up here at 6 o'clock. We're still talking some football, still some time for some phone calls, 694-1055, 694-1055. All right, so now a little bit different. We heard that, I haven't seen it this weekend, and I'll start paying attention to it. Last year after they lost the national championship, Coach Saban was out recruiting, and recruiting and recruiting and recruiting. Like, I don't even know if he went home to Tuscaloosa, just was on the road. And so now he's going to be doing that for, I guess you got to wait until after. That would be the difference. You got to wait until after the national championship.
Yeah, after championship. The championship.
After the national championship.
Dead period's over on the 12th. So I actually just looked it up.
Yeah, it's the what dead the Wednesday or something after the.
The dead period ends January 12th, except the 7 days immediately before the first day of classes of the institution's second academic period. In other words, the semester about to start.
Right.
If you have early enrollees, you can communicate with them as they're enrolling in your school.
So basically they can start Thursday after the championship game.
Yeah, but those are already in there.
Monday.
Yeah.
They're already in.
Well, but school's not started until like this Thursday. A lot of schools will go back this Thursday. A lot of colleges will start back.
But I think what you're talking about
is next year's class.
Yeah, Nick will be on the road. Not on the road. He didn't hit the road. He goes in the jet.
Right.
He'll be in that jet going across the country left and right, New Jersey to California, visiting next year's potential.
Right. He says he's only got one high school kid. We're planning on a visit this year.
Only one he's planning on the visiting.
Official visit for this year's class.
I guess still left? Well, I mean, they can't really going to take that.
No, you don't have that much. What, he's 28? Like, I only got one high school kid coming in.
Yeah, I mean.
As of right now, or then maybe last week.
So, but otherwise, you know, you can bet he'll be in that on that jet, and he'll be somewhere coast to coast seeing next year's class.
All right, well, quickly while we're here, we'll throw one. The hottest two NFC pro football teams.
Green Bay Packers are one of them.
And the San Francisco 49ers.
And the 49ers.
How about, by the way, Jared Stidham playing a ball game the other day? How about that?
Even a blind hog can find an acorn.
He did. He found it. He played really well.
Who won?
I understand that, but, you know, the other team's pretty good.
But, you know,
what's that? Exactly a 13-10 ball game.
But, you know, what's happened to Green Bay is their receivers have finally matured, and the passing relationship between them and Aaron Rodgers has matured. And so I think he's getting more comfortable with them. That's helped a lot. But that 1,000-yard rusher they got, that is really picked
now
it up.
Now we're getting to the point.
Well,
the big uglies have gotten well,
and now Aaron has
more time to throw and they can run the ball.
That's the thing. I was going to say, it's not like Aaron Rodgers had a huge ball game.
No.
It's like 15-24 for like a $180.
Yeah. But
they ran the ball.
Right.
And when you get to
– and some turnovers, a lot of turnovers.
January
and a kickoff
the playoffs, and it's cold, and it's real football weather, et cetera. You got to run
the ball.
All right. Georgia, TCU.
I'll go with Georgia despite the number of injured players, but I'm going to say it's going to be closer than, 13.5, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say maybe Georgia by 10, but that may be late, you know, somewhere around 38, 31 or something of that nature.
41-30.
Georgia.
Michael. Hunker down, you hairy dogs.
Michael?
I actually think TCU is going to win.
Oh.
That might be a hopeful prediction, but I will be rooting very hard for TCU.
I think they have a shot.
The two pick sixes against Michigan, the fact that that's what it took does scare me a little bit, but I think they can create some turnovers. So we'll see what happens.
I'll go 35-31 Georgia.
Yeah, minimum it'll be close.
I think so. All right, gentlemen, Happy New Year.
Good job, Dave.
Thank you very much for coming in.
To Dr. Gary Phillips.
Thanks to Dr. Gary Phillips. Thanks to John Hendricks, SI Now. Thanks to Chris Gordy. And thanks to Tony Tsoukalos. Thanks to Michael Bronner for doing a bang-up job. The effort is always appreciated. We'll be back tomorrow again. Have seen no further update on DeMar Hamlin since what the Bills put out at 12:30. I'm sure stay tuned, and you'll hear it right here on WNSP. You got the John Ruschetti Show up next, and then pregame for Alabama Ole Miss at 7. Keep it tuned in. Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.